It's Monday, and the place to watch the football game is Pizza Rock at Green Valley Ranch.
And disaster for the Jets.
The key is, it was the Popeye's spicy chicken sandwiches.
Just remember that. Next time you get a shot at him, take the shot.
This is jumbo jumbo. I've never seen anything so jumbo.
I'm going to lay here, and I'm going to take it.
It's time for Cofield and Company with Steve Cofield on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. Pizza Rock on a Monday night. Monday Night Football coming up. Cowboys and the Giants. Good to have a Giants fan in the house with the company today. Adam Candy's here back in our Findlay Toyota Studios. One Ari Angel helping out at Pizza Rock Green Valley Ranch as well. Happy hour has begun. Food and drink as low as $4. Plenty of prizes, t-shirts, movie tickets, show tickets, UNLV football and basketball tickets. So get on down here. Parking is free, and we are getting ready for what is an important Monday Night Football game for the Cowboys. We'll kind of get into what the Giants want to accomplish here in game number 9 of the season. Let's do it.
It's time for the three. Presented by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call him today at 577-2600.
Weird Sunday in the NFL. Some odd results to go over. Some teams that were riding high fell, and some of them fell really badly. We'll get to some of those later on. Colts didn't fall real badly, but that was not a quality loss at Pittsburgh. Jacoby Brissett goes down. Hoyer, the $9 million backup, didn't exactly light it up, and now they're going to have to deal with a Brissett knee injury probably for a couple of weeks, just seeing that there's a chance he could play this week, but that doesn't sound great. So Colts take a little step back in terms of the hierarchy in the AFC.
Not an awful loss at the same time. They were not favored in the game, even with the Steelers throwing Mason Rudolph out there and no James Conner. The Steelers' defense by Pro Football Focus is rated number 2 in all of football, so you know there is at least that issue for them to contend with on the Colts side. I think that this is the rare team where we're actually going to have to say that special teams is the issue. Vinatieri has had an awful season, and he has had some kicks that either have cost them, like it did this week, or nearly cost them.
How can a new age guy, Frank Reich, first of all, be so beholden to a kicker, and across the board at the organization, is it just a lack of a decision maker who wants to make the tough one because they've got a history with this guy? Like, move on.
I don't understand.
He's not reliable.
It's hurting them. It's clearly hurting them at this point. And yeah, the fact that that interception that Hoyer threw got run back 99 yards, look, it wasn't a good throw. It wasn't an awful throw. He didn't throw it right at somebody. Just didn't see Minka Fitzpatrick, that is, closing on that ball the way that he did. So, I mean, ultimately, I don't think it's a great loss for the Colts, but I'm a lot less worried about them than I am some other teams that lost yesterday.
Latest headline on NFL.com says Colts optimistic Brissett MCL sprain will play. Did you watch any of the Dolphins and Jets game yesterday?
More than I care to share, yeah.
Why?
Because that was some very solid Pac-12 way after dark football.
Okay.
You know what I mean. Essentially a college game happening maybe 12 hours after the end of the college slate happening. But yes, I did.
I gotcha. Is it weird that the Dolphins won? That's not weird. I know on the Sunday football preview show, John Von Tobel and I both took the Dolphins plus the 3.5. I have no faith in the Jets at this point. The Dolphins, I think, have been fighting for Flores. Is it weird that Flores celebrated? The players did, with a Gatorade bath? Or is that shameful with as bad a season as you've had? Or can you just enjoy the few morsels that you get?
The only reason that I have a problem with it is because Miami failed to accomplish the goal the organization set out for it before the game, which is to lose and lose and lose more. You do not play to win the game Herm Edwards style if you're the Miami Dolphins. You're playing to go 0-16, and you might have cost yourself 4 spots in the draft by winning this game. So by virtue of winning the game, Cincinnati moves ahead of them, Washington moves ahead of them, the Jets move ahead of them because of the tiebreaker. So, I mean, ultimately, Yeah, let them have their fun. They deserve to have some fun. Can you imagine what it's been like for the last 2 months having everybody tell them how much they suck, no matter how much money they're making and how much glory they have as NFL players? And have everyone tell them that they are awful. Good for them for celebrating, but you know what? They did miss out on the goal.
This is Dynamite News that just came down in the last 2 hours. So they've got a new starting running back. Actually, came down about 40 minutes ago. New starting running back in for Kenyon Drake, who was traded over to the Cardinals, Mark Walton, and now he's been suspended 4 games for substance issues, the NFL docking the rookie running back 4 games.
Now this is the Dolphins I can get behind. This is what you're supposed to do. You bring in a guy who gets banged for 4 games. That's how you get the number one pick.
Is that how they're going to orchestrate
that's
the rest
exactly
of the season?
That's exactly how you do this. That's exactly how the
slipping
season's
going to be done. PEDs into the shakes?
They're roofying their own players.
Have 11 guys suspended in the next couple of weeks.
Potentially.
Isn't it sad, though? And this is going to be the story in the second half. I think it might have been on Monday. We rolled through all – that was like the top – maybe it might have been Tuesday. That was the top story of the day. We're rolling through Tankathon, and you just, you know, detailed what happens to Miami with this loss. But for a lot of these teams, that's like all they're playing for. Frankly, as a Jets fan – I mean, I don't know if you followed me on Twitter yesterday. We'll get to it in the 4 o'clock hour, but like, I watched the first half of the Jets and Dolphins, and I was like, yeah, I got other things to do. And then I was listening, driving around, and I'm like, just lose, please, because now for the Jets, it's the Chase Young Derby. Just lose as many games as possible. That is, think about how pathetic that is, though, if you bought tickets to Jet Stadium for the season. I mean, there are certain markets. You buy season tickets. I mean, you're in like a five-year cycle of trying to rebuild. How much money do you have to spend before they're good again?
Keep something in mind, Raiders fans. That PSL requires that you buy those season tickets every single year, no matter if the organization is tanking or not. So if you're a fan of any of those teams I just mentioned a moment ago, and you don't want your season tickets when you're done trusting the process and everything is better a few years from now, well, someone else is going to have them. You're not going to have the chance. So you better keep paying for those season tickets all the way throughout. It's a terrible situation, but I also say to you, welcome, because this is where I, as a Giants fan, have been for about the last 3 years.
But here's the problem, is that the Giants didn't really start doing it, right?
Well, that's Gettleman's fault,
yeah,
not the Giants' fault.
The Giants never officially did it, and with the selection of Jones, they were sort of doing it. We'll see what they, you know, we'll talk about this later, the goals of the Giants in this game. Like, do they even want to win the game? Obviously, the Jets and the Giants are in weird positions because they want a tank, they need more good players. To me, the Giants blew it by taking the quarterback 1 year too soon. They could have got a quality defensive lineman in the last draft. But now they're both facing really no other goal than getting a high pick. But they're also trying to develop a young quarterback. So you don't want to have the young quarterback killed and have his confidence just destroyed. So you're trying to balance this whole thing but not win games. It's bizarro.
I don't know that you're trying to not win games unless you are Washington or Cincinnati or Miami, these teams that clearly are at the point where they're saying, we got to get a quarterback, right? And the Dwayne Haskins thing has fallen apart.
You have to admit, that would be amazing if the Redskins back-to-back years take a quarterback. Yeah, you have to admit, the Giants are much better off winning. I mean, this is obvious. Like, there's no point in winning 5 or 6 games.
There is none.
So you're better off 2, 3, and 4, but it's this tricky game you got to play where you're balancing it. And it's not like, you know, Saquon Barkley wants to go out there and not win. I mean, you still have players on the team who are proud. You have veterans who want to get things done. See, I look at the Raiders, and let's get to the game yesterday here in just a second. I know you got a whole rant on how close this was to the Raiders losing, but let's talk about where the Raiders are right now. So now they're 4-4. The tankathon began before last year when they moved on Mac, and then, you know, Reggie's roster has just been blown out in the last year and a half. Do you feel at 4-4 they're ahead of schedule?
No, I feel they're right where John Gruden wanted them to be. I think John Gruden believed in Derek Carr more than we knew and has actually given Derek Carr the opportunity to succeed, because we said right from the beginning, right, this was Derek Carr's make-or-break season. You either had to show it this year with the improvements you got at running back, with the improvements you got at offensive line, and we were thinking with the improvements you had at wide receiver. You were thinking this is the year that Derek Carr has to show or go. And for better or for worse, if you are someone who is a Derek Carr detractor, you've had to deal with it because he's getting better this year. And I've said all along, he is an above-average quarterback, and that's good enough in the NFL. Now, the defense is by far not good enough, and this team is cruising towards 7-9 this year. If they finish 8-8, 9-7, fantastic, but they're not making the playoffs with either of those numbers, and you're going to pick 15th or 16th in draft, and that's going to put you right on the same track that you probably would have been with the, let's say, 7th or 8th pick. So they're at least giving the Oakland fans a little something on the way out, but they're not tanking because John Gruden didn't want them to tank, and neither did Mike Mayock.
Yeah, I'm not sure they have to. I think they've got enough building blocks now on offense to be an above-average offense. What did you see from Carr yesterday? I thought he played one of his better games. If, you know, the one critique on Derek Carr all year has been dink and dunk and not pushing the ball down the field. I thought he pushed the ball down the field in key situations. I don't know if that was the that's a highly advised pass that he threw to Jalen Richard on the touchdown attaining drive. He kind of threw it up. There was another receiver over there, but there was three defenders there, but it was right on the money. He pushed it down the field. He had a deep middle that he pushed down the field. I thought he had a great game.
Derek Carr is doing exactly what John Gruden wants him to. He's managing the game, and I'm not. Don't put the game manager tag on him. He's better than that. But Derek Carr is taking care of the football. He's standing in the pocket because his offensive line is proving to be much better this year, and that was the biggest problem in the last 2 years with Derek Carr post-leg break, is that he would not stand in, that he would get happy feet, that he would throw ill-advised passes from the pocket, that he would get rid of the ball too soon.
Yeah, he was also getting killed. I mean, you're talking years they allowed 50-plus sacks. This year they're top five on the positive side in terms of sacks allowed. So that has changed.
The offensive line is much better. Now to say that Derek Carr is, you know, pushing the issue, I mean, look, he has 26 deep attempts on the year through 8 games. So right. That's not
it's
a
still
ton.
Low. I thought yesterday in key situations. I also think that he did push the ball down the field. The other thing is, I think we have to – I'm not here to make excuses for Derek Carr, but we also have to look at the collection of receivers he's got. I mean, yesterday he got one of Marcel Aitman. You're like, oh, wait, I forgot Marcel Aitman's back on the team. That's the guy they cut. The loss of Antonio Brown cannot be discounted. Not that Brown was going to be, you know, some massive downfield threat, but he certainly is. He doesn't have a ton of threats to throw the ball downfield. A lot of it's gone to the tight ends.
Well, you can say a lot of it's going to the tight ends. Darren Waller has proven to be, at the worst, a top five tight end in the league this year. So he's proven to be a far above average target. That's another upgrade that you handed him. Look, the receivers have not been great, but what's the big difference? You took Antonio Brown out, right? That's a huge difference. But that is not all to the credit of Derek Carr, because I'm not someone who got that far down on him in the first place. I don't think he's that different this year. I think you're giving him different circumstances. I think you're giving him an upgraded offensive line. I think Josh Jacobs can't be discounted. You used a first-round pick on him. This is exactly what you were supposed to do. This is what you were supposed to be doing to see if Derek Carr could do the job. I always believed he could do the job well enough, and he is doing the job well enough.
More on the Raiders at 3:30 as we go behind the patch. Adam Hill is on the road. He covers the Raiders for the paper and, of course, part of the company, so he'll be with us. On the way back, though, we'll get to what developed over the weekend with UNLV football, as this is where they did not want to be, sitting with a 7th loss.
The 3 is brought to you by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call today at 577-2600 to receive a $500 coupon towards your appraisal or any purchase or refinance. Dial up Dustin now. 577-2600.
This is a really bad loss for the New York Jets.
Yeah, it really is.
Everything going on and drama and guys upset. You mentioned name and trades. And
that'll take it to the end of the football game. The final score, the Miami Dolphins 26, the New York Jets 18, and the first win of the Brian Flores era in Miami.
Monday Night Football is coming. And Cofield and Company is at Pizza Rock inside Green Valley Ranch.
Interesting. Very melancholy radio call at the end of the Dolphins-Jets game. Can't blame them. It's a bad loss for the Jets. Only hitch there is that was actually the Dolphins radio network. My God, could they be less excited about the first win of the season?
They get it. They get it. They understand what the goal is. My goodness, they're the ones who know that the Dolphins organization does not want them to win, and they are employees of the Dolphins organization. They get it.
It was weird. They were weird throughout the game. I listened to, like I said, I was driving around yesterday for the second half of the Jets and Dolphins game, and I got to hear the Dolphins radio network, and they just seemed irked the entire time that the Dolphins We're winning. It was a bizarre day yesterday, no doubt. Rough Saturday for the Rebel football team as they go on the road and just have a disastrous first quarter. Put them behind the eight ball. They played okay the rest of the way. Offensively, they never really got it going. Defensively, they, you know, were okay the rest of the way. But that's a seventh loss. Not where they wanted to be. 2-7 now, and we know the edict was sent out there by Desiree Reed-Francois when Tony Sanchez was retained that, you know, they needed to get to 6 or 7 wins, make a bowl game. That was the next natural step. Well, Adam, they can't do it. Can't get there. So best they can do is 5-7. Tony Sanchez, speaking to Mike Romala, our buddy from the Las Vegas Sun, said that he would not resign. He's going to be around for the rest of the season. That's not entirely his decision, but he's not going to walk away. First of all, are you surprised by that? That he's not going to walk away?
He has 600,000 reasons not to walk away. I mean, there's 2 years of a buyout left on this contract if Tony Sanchez chooses to stay on and ultimately is not retained. So, no, there's no reason for him to resign.
From a football standpoint, I also think it's silly for him to resign. So, I don't believe the team has quit on him. I don't think they're ready to play in the first quarter or Saturday, though. Man, they came out sleepwalking. That kickoff return was just a bad sign of things to come. Tackling wasn't great. Protecting the edge, not great at all. And Kenny Noblad, I thought that was his worst game to this point from an accuracy standpoint. He just seemed skittish and fired up. Everything was high.
He's a freshman, right? I mean, what ultimately can we expect out of him is other than up and down. You saw some good, you saw some bad, and I don't think it's fair at all to ask Kenyon Oblad to carry anything. We know that this is a team that has to be a rushing team, and when you're down 21-0 after the first quarter, you can't afford to be a rushing team.
What do you think DRF should do?
The only thing that I think Desiree Reed-Francois owes everyone right now is clarity in the plan, and we did not get that in the comments after the game. Grimala also asked Desiree Reed-Francois, you know, is Tony Sanchez going to finish the season? And she gave a non-answer, right? She essentially said, we have games in front of us that we need to focus on right now. That's not good enough for where this program is at the moment because she set an expectation that it was bowl eligibility or bust for evaluating Tony Sanchez. And the biggest reason that she owes this to the fans is there are more home games this season. You have two more home games that you're asking your fans to show up for. For what? What can they expect out of showing up for these last couple of games at this point? Are they watching a lame duck coach? Are they watching a coach who's getting another year? Are they watching a program with a direction? And when you don't answer the question about Tony Sanchez's future, then you don't tell anybody what the direction of the program is. Does she have to fire him right now? No, I don't think so at all. But if not, you need to explain to people why your expectation changed. Has the team looked better? Have they bought in a way that you didn't think they were going to buy in? Okay, then that's the reason. Then he gets to keep going. If not, then make it clear, not only to the fans, but to the team and to potential recruits, because remember, we are less than 6 weeks away from the early signing day, and if you're going to set the next coach up for success, then that coach needs to be able to come in here and have some opportunity to recruit to the early signing period as well, because if you wait till the end of the season, then you're basically punting on the early signing period for whatever recruits that Tony Sanchez is going toward if you're going to fire him.
Well, that one's interesting. If they got rid of him this week, do you think they'd have a coach in place in time to do any recruiting?
I think we just need to use the basketball situation as a guide because we know that Desiree Reed-Francois said at the time she always keeps a list of potential coaches, mm-hmm. right? So if you're keeping a list of potential football coaches, you might at least have the opportunity to put the word out there that A, there's going to be a new coach, and B, you might be able to move quicker on this than you originally would be able to in a different situation because this question was being asked at this time last year. So you've had a year to prepare for this, and we know that she said at the time that this is something she does regularly for all sports, not just for basketball, not just for football. Just as a matter of course to say whether it's her choice or whether a coach chooses to leave, it's only prudent to have an idea of who might be next.
Boy, that early signing period changes everything, doesn't it?
Hugely.
When you're switching football coaches.
Hugely.
Because if the season, you know, and it ends for most teams, if you're firing your coach, it's going to end at the end of November. First signing period is what? I have to look up the date. December 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th?
Yeah,
right around there?
It's right after that,
So,
yeah.
I mean, you're dumping a coach. If you don't have the process expedited behind the scenes like a couple of weeks in advance, you're probably not going to get a coach in place before the early signing day. In a way, it's almost, man, it's tough because he actually has a pretty good list of commits. Do you drag it out, hope that they stay around all the way until the end, and then a coach can come in that last week and try to save all those commits? Will that coach want those commits? Will that coach want to run the same style that Tony Sanchez is recruiting to? The firing early part, that's tricky too, because one, you don't want to do what TKM did, and that thing turned into a disaster, and then she got a bad break after firing Rice because she got Beard, and Beard would have been awesome here for, you know, probably 2 or 3 years. But, you know, we know all about the whole region process. That's changed. Those folks, especially the Northerners. Northerners still owe us money, I believe, because they screwed up that whole freaking system. Can't imagine the amount of money they lost the program and lost UNLV with the time they freaking wasted by trying to rake, you know, Chris Beard over the coals and freak him out before he took the Texas Tech job. Yeah, I mean, if they got rid of Tony Sanchez, then they'd have to be looking at folks who and want someone in place quickly. Then they'd have to be looking at folks who don't have a job. If you read Mark Anderson in the paper today, I don't know if he came up with these names on his own. I'm guessing not, that he was floated some names. The model with the list of names seems to be the same model that was followed for T.J. Otzelberger, which is up-and-coming coaches, currently coaches, maybe a couple of high-profile Power 5 assistants. Well, guess when they can, when all of those folks can take the job? Not right now, right? So you have to wait on all of those. So this the early signing period thing, I mean, to me, you're screwed, right? If you're getting rid of the coach, you're screwed. You have to deal with it. You're not going to be able to save it, can you?
How do you make yourself less screwed? That's the only situation you can deal with, right? If you're truly screwed, then less screwed is to do something now, because you at least are giving everyone the information up front. Everyone has the chance to deal with it without having to make a last-second hasty decision. That's when you're going to get yourself in trouble, is if commits have to make last-second decisions, is if coaches have to make last-second decisions about who they want to keep and who they want to bring in. Asking everybody to do this at the last second is not the way to go. Look, Willie Taggart just got fired at Florida State, and David Coburn, the athletic director, said this. It was not an easy decision. You have to look at season ticket sales, renewals, new tickets moving forward. Obviously, those are tied to booster contributions. You're looking at the implications for concessions, parking. You look at that vis-a-vis the cost of a buyout, cost of new coaching staff. You have to make a decision. Those are all things that have to go into the decision that the UNLV administration has to make. If you are not making this decision right now, then you at least need to make clear to everybody what is going to happen right at the end of the season, because the lack of clarity is the one thing that is going to truly screw you here.
ESPN Las Vegas.
Hey, Raiders on three. 1, 2, 3.
Raiders.
Home of the Raiders fan.
Raider Nation. Let's go. Let's go. Raider Nation.
Carr steps off into the left, still looking for someone to come free. Fires back in the end zone. Got it. Touchdown. Hunter Renfro broke free at the edge. Derek Carr and Hunter Renfro shows why he's so valuable. He kept working, knew his quarterback was in trouble, and came free.
What's going on with the Raiders? Adam Hill's got you covered. It's time to go behind the patch. Only on Cofield and Company.
Yeah, big Adam on the road all week as the next game's right around the corner. We'll get John Gruden's thoughts on Thursday Night Football in less than five. Adam, how you doing?
I am good. It's a very lovely day up here in the Bay.
Excellent. What was the locker room like? What was the post game like after a very dramatic win with a goal line stand at the end?
I thought there was, you know, a lot of energy, a lot of enthusiasm. I thought they were very excited. I think, you know, being home gave them a nice boost of energy, but you could obviously tell there was a different kind of a feeling, just kind of knowing that they have a game on tap in just 3 days, and everybody kind of knew there wasn't a whole lot of time to, you know, think about it and celebrate. It's time to focus on the next one, and I think a lot of the players in particular really were kind of already in that mode of, man, I can't believe we have to play in 3 days. A lot of guys that were beaten up and banged up a little bit, and knowing that they have to get right back on the field.
We'll get the injury updates here in just a couple seconds. Adam Hill on the road as we go behind the patch. Let's talk about some particulars during the game, especially down the stretch. You know, we've talked so much about this defensive line not doing such a great job, not putting pressure on quarterbacks. I thought the rotation of defensive linemen as a you know, as a unit yesterday, did a really good job down the stretch, and you saw some new faces, some guys who, you know, haven't been making big plays really come through.
Yeah, I think you definitely saw a little bit of that yesterday, and it's guys, I think that's what they're going to have to do. There's not guys that they can put out there, and you're not going to see what, you know, Ingram and Bosa do for the Chargers, and, you know, anything like that out of the Raiders. But I think as long as they're, you know, rotating enough guys, keeping guys fresh, you've got guys like Max Crosby, who has been kind of an impact maker, a difference maker. Cleveland Furrow actually made a couple of plays yesterday, which, you know, I think is surprising. You almost hear it in the press box when they announce, you know, Cleveland Furrow in on the tackle, or if he's close to a pressure, you almost hear like, oh, interesting. Like something actually happened from that guy. So, yeah, I think the strong rotation yesterday of guys and staying fresh and trying to find different ways to get to the quarterback and to impact the running plays in the middle and those sorts of things, you're starting to see that develop. And then, you know, Arden Key, I thought, had a little bit better game yesterday, and all of a sudden looks like he might be out for a little bit now. So kind of a frustrating up and down there. So every time something good happens, something bad seems to happen after it.
Well, how bad is the injury to Key? Is it a broken foot or something less severe?
They believe it's a broken foot. It's feared to be a broken foot. They're still waiting for the test results to come back on that. But that is their concern right now, that he has a broken foot, which would certainly be a big setback for him. And as you mentioned, I mean, it's the depth in the rotations is really what's kind of helping them right now. So when you start to lose guys, that's really going to impact what they can do in that regard.
Yeah, I thought Hankins was great down the stretch. P.J. Hall made a couple of plays. Mayoa was in there putting pressure, and especially on the final play. Let's talk about what happened in the final seconds there, because the Raiders actually, as the clock is running, called the timeout with 8 seconds left. What was going on? Why did the Raiders call a timeout there? I saw some people claiming that, hey, the Raiders were just not in the right position defensively, and they would have been cooked had they not called the timeout.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely what it was there. Now, I saw a lot of people at first kind of criticize the call and say, hey, the Lions are scrambling there. They're trying to figure out what they're doing. Why are you helping them out by stopping the clock? I don't really think that was the case. Kind of being there and watching it, the Lions seemed like they were in control. They knew what they were doing. They kind of had a plan for, hey, if this play gets stopped short, that third down play I'm referencing, we don't have a timeout, so we're going to have a play call, be ready to go, get up to the line and go. And I thought they were. I thought they were ready to go. I thought they were going to be just fine. And the Raiders, on the other hand, were really scrambling around, because I think they're thinking on the third down play, okay, we make a tackle in bounds, we pretty much won the game, but that's not the case. You have to scramble up, get ready for another play, and try to figure out what you want to do. And I think the Raiders wanted to make sure that they had the right play call. It seemed like Carl Joseph was back there kind of screaming to try to get the call. He wasn't recognized. Some other players kind of jumped in there and eventually did get the call made. So the players were calling it, and I think it was that they wanted to make sure that they had the right call, that they knew what they were doing. And I don't think they were protecting the Lions from doing anything. The Lions were ready to go. They were under control. They knew their plan, and they were ready to go with it.
Do we know what the Lions were trying to do on the play? The target could not have been former VTech quarterback Logan Thomas, who's now a tight end. That couldn't have been the number one target.
I think it was.
Oh, my God. With all the weapons they have?
But I think that was the thing. I think it was like outguessing, you know, second or outsmarting yourself in a way of, hey, we're going to take these guys off the field. We're going to go with they made it look clear run formation, no question about it. Hey, Logan Thomas is in there, not one of the other guys. And I think, you know, Hockenson, I believe, was in concussion protocol, so I don't think he could have been out there. I think you're going to show run look without Galladay and Jones on the field. And just say, hey, look, this is a run formation. We're going to run the ball and try to be smarter than them. And I think it backfired a little bit for sure, because it didn't work out. The play just wasn't there. It's not like they missed on anything. There wasn't anybody open. They tried to make a great play on it. The Raiders just played better on that play, and they were ready for it. So I think it was just it was a kind of a game of chess there, and the Lions clearly lost.
Adam, when we look at what goes on with the Raiders from here on out, there's been a lot of talk about how much softer the schedule gets. You obviously start to mix in some home games after spending a year or two on the road. So how do you see this playoff picture shaping up for the Raiders over the second half of the season? Do you think it has to go through the AFC West, or do you think that they are a legit wild card contender?
I mean, I think that they can be a wild card contender for sure. I think the, you know, demise of the Chiefs has been greatly exaggerated. I think that team wins the division and kind of runs away with it, you know, eventually. So I think it's going to have to be through the wild card. And you start to look around, nobody's really distancing themselves. I mean, the Colts had a chance yesterday to continue to start to build a good record, and that didn't happen. All these teams seem to be, you know, just kind of settling into that just over 500 scenario, except for Buffalo, who I think has, what, five more games against winless teams or something like that the rest of the year. So, I mean, if the Bills don't win 12 games, that's a national travesty with that schedule. So, I mean, that's probably one wild card that's already determined. And then you've got one other wild card. And so I think there's all these teams that are going to be fighting for it. And certainly the Raiders should be in the mix for that, the way that the schedule shapes up. I mean, you have to win this game Thursday. And it helps, even though the Raiders hate this. John Gruden said today he thinks there should be no Thursday night football. But, you know, when you're at home and then you have another home game on Thursday, when you're in a spot where you don't have to travel, it's such a massive advantage over the road team. And so the Raiders are in that good spot against the Chargers, even though I think the Chargers are a better team than them. We'll see what happens in that game. You should be in an advantageous position to win, and then you've got the Bengals at home. So all of a sudden, you could be 6-4, and you are right in the mix. And that's what they were looking for. That's why if they got through that long road trip without being completely out of the race, they were going to be in it till the end, and that's kind of where they are now.
Adam Hill from the Review Journal, our friend from Cofield & Company, joining us here. Adam, do you think that the Chargers are a clearly better team than the Raiders? Would you have said that before the dismantling of the Packers this past week? You think it's just having that defensive line healthy that makes them that much better? Because, I mean, that's a Chargers team that went on the road and needed a missed field goal to not lose to the hapless Bears a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I have no doubt that the Chargers are a better team. I think being fully healthy, we saw yesterday what they did, obviously, with those guys both on the field together. They are dominant in that regard. I think they were helped a little bit by, changing coordinators, whether it's, you know, Steichen's the answer or not. I think anytime you change coordinators and kind of give a different look that teams aren't ready for, it's gonna change it. So I don't think that's, you know, a determining factor. I just think they have better players. They're a better team than the Raiders are, and you know we see that, you know, indicated in the line. The line being where it is tells you the Chargers are a better team. It's just a better spot for the Raiders here on Thursday night, and we'll see. In addition to getting that win, it could also, you know, you also hand a loss to the Chargers. The Chargers team that still, despite all their struggles, still have aspirations on the wild card as well. So it is a massive game, just like the game in Houston was a massive game for that reason, that they could have tried to, you know, put a loss on the Texans, a team that you could compete with and might have a tiebreaker with down the road. That's the same scenario that's going to come up on Thursday.
The Raiders are 4-4, and as the guy said, Thursday night football coming up against the Chargers. And you nailed the narrative. One of the big narratives going into the game is, how do you protect Derek Carr from Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa? Bosa's just been on fire, and he tortured Aaron Rodgers yesterday. How do you do that with questions at center and with questions at your right tackle? I mean, what's going on right now with Hudson and Trent Brown?
Yeah, I didn't, you know, John Gruden, for those that, if you hear the audio later on his press conference, I highly recommend you actually watch the video as well. I don't think John Gruden slept. That was my read from it. He looked miserable.
Nice.
So, I mean, he was speaking earlier. He said they're waiting for the results on a lot of the guys. I would say, just based on body language and the way he was talking, and again, that's somebody who looks very tired, so I'm not exactly sure. But based on that, I don't think there's a great chance that Rodney Hudson plays this week. He didn't sound optimistic at all. Now, that, you know, he is one of the tougher guys you're going to see, and I know, talking to some of the other linemen yesterday, that Hudson wanted to go yesterday, so he might give it a try. But man, 3-day turnaround is certainly not going to help, you know, having a short week to try to get him back out there. So maybe Andre James at center, and then Trent Brown. I didn't get very optimistic vibes out of them on him either. They're waiting for the MRI results. He's a guy that had to leave the game yesterday. He actually came out on the first series, and then he came back in on the second series, but he can only go a couple of plays. And those couple of plays that he came back in for, I know, sitting around talking to some people in the press box, we were like, that guy does not look like he can play football right now. He's trying to really labor through every step that he's taking. So he did not look right yesterday at all. And again, with the short week, it's going to be tough for him to get out there. So, man, if you're down those two guys, that becomes very difficult. If you're on Trent Brown on the right side, good luck trying to get protection. I think they're going to have to try to, you know, chip and cut and do whatever they can to try to slow those guys down a little bit, maybe some misdirections, some screens. I don't think they're going to be able to just block them straight up and try to keep them out of the backfield. And those guys we saw yesterday can control an entire game just on what they're able to do to the offensive line and to the quarterback. So that's going to be a huge thing coming up on Thursday night, and certainly the next couple hours of the MRI machines are going to be hard at work here at the facility, and they're going to see what those guys can do. But if they're missing both of them, good luck. But at the same time, they've been able to fill in and just, you know, figure it out throughout the season. That's been one of the strengths of this team, one of the most surprising things, that this offensive line that was rebuilt that they had such high hopes for has not really been out there together at all, but they've still been able to get things blocked on a weekly basis.
Yep, Andre James got the job done yesterday. Now, on Friday, we talked about the return of Brandon Marshall, Las Vegas, Cimarron High guy. We're like, oh, is he going to play this week? And then today, he's cut.
He gone. Yeah, that was a decision that was made. He was inactive yesterday, so he didn't play. And then today, Isaiah Johnson is ready to come back off of the short-term IR, and they had to make a roster move, and it's Brandon Marshall that's the casualty of that. So he was back here for a grand total of, you know, 4 days, I think it is, and now he's gone. So such is life in the NFL. It sucks. I know a lot of people in Vegas were very happy that he was coming back. I know Brandon Marshall was happy to be back, but a very short-lived stay back here in Oakland.
Adam, we appreciate it. We'll catch up with you soon with a game right around the corner. Thank you.
Yes, sir. See you guys.
There you go. Adam Hill, Las Vegas Review Journal, part of the company. We'll get back into the Raiders because I know you wanted to rant a little bit about some of the clock management down the stretch. That'll come up at around 4:30. Big Five is on the way. We'll get into the Browns and the Patriots losing to the Ravens. But I want to go back to talk about the UNLV football job and also tie it to what Adam started to, Adam Candy, and that is the I don't know if it's shocking, but it's an expensive move down in Tallahassee where Florida State, after 21 games, has told Willie Taggart bye-bye.
Prices plus food and drink specials starting at $4. It's Pizza Rock for Monday Night Football inside Green Valley Ranch.
Hand off Jalen Thomas off left tackle. He gets away from Plummer, and he goes into the end zone for a touchdown. Miles Plummer had a shot at him, missed him. An 11-yard touchdown run for Jalen Thomas, and it's now 20-0 Colorado State.
Monday Night Football is coming. And Cofield and Company is at Pizza Rock inside Green Valley Ranch.
And not a great Saturday for UNLV. A couple of long touchdown runs, you know, in the 16 to 18 yard range. Did them in, kickoff return. Just could not get things going offensively. They had a couple of moments at the end of the first half that could have changed the game, but they came up about 4 yards short as the clock ran out. And then beginning of the second half, they drove right down the field and then stalled inside the 10. I mean, you get a couple of touchdowns there. It was 24-0 at the half. So you get a couple of touchdowns there. Instead, you got 24-14 with like 12 minutes left in the third quarter. You got yourself a contest, but it just did not happen. And now Tony Sanchez and the Rebels have suffered a seventh loss this year. That means no bowl game. That means six wins, not attainable. Earlier, we were talking about what Desiree Reed-Francois, the athletic director, may do with Tony Sanchez. Sanchez says he's not going to walk away. He's going to coach out the rest of the year and see what happens at that point. He's got a lot of allies in his corner, right? A lot of money people in his corner. And we mentioned that the paper had a list of candidates. Do you think that list is going to float lots of boats around Las Vegas? I'm not saying that's the list, but the list that Mark Anderson had, I'm not sure that that's what people are expecting.
Are you expecting that they're going to pay this coach? Because if you're not going to offer up serious money, then you're not going to get a list that looks a whole lot different than what Mark Anderson floated, which is young up-and-coming coordinators and coaches from much smaller FBS schools looking to make a jump. That's it.
Story said that her goal is to pay someone in the upper third of the Mountain West Conference when it comes to football coaches. Believe it or not, Wyoming has the highest paid coach in the league, $2.1 million, with Craig Bull. Jeff Tedford is at 1.6. I know CSU is north of $1 million with Mike Bobo. By the way, that stadium, whew, that's nice, really nice. $220 million stadium on campus. They also have, believe it or not, one of the top five in totality naming rights deals in all of college football. $38 million naming deal on that Kansas Stadium. The list of candidates includes the UAB coach, Bill Clark. Two FCS options. Of course, again, this is just one story in the local paper. Weber State coach, North Dakota State coach. A couple of Power Five names mentioned. A 30-year-old wide receivers coach at LSU. and the Oklahoma co-offensive coordinator.
So you mentioned you mentioned Mike Bobo, right? Mike Bobo in Colorado State. Where did Mike Bobo come from? Mike Bobo came from the SEC, right? So if you think you're going to get an SEC coordinator and pay less than what Mike Bobo is making, then you might want to think seriously about that.
Top half of the SEC coordinators all make north of $800,000, if not into the, believe it or not, low millions for coordinators.
Because you can pay it. And look, TJ Otzelberger ended up getting more money than I think anybody thought a coach from his level was going to get coming to UNLV, but we also know the history with boosters here being willing to back a basketball coach. We've never seen it with football. That doesn't mean it can't happen, because obviously we have the money that built the facility for UNLV football that came with Tony Sanchez, however you want to say that, however you want to characterize that. The commitment to Tony Sanchez brought the commitment to the Fertitta Football Complex. Now, when it comes to a new football coach, who's going to be that backer, not only to deal with a $600,000 buyout to Tony Sanchez and the buyouts to the rest of his assistants, but then also to pay a new coach in the upper third of the Mountain West for a UNLV program that we know, despite having its debts wiped out, is going to have to generate a lot of money from this new stadium and from the deals that it has going into the Raiders stadium in order to help this program stay in the black, period, because basketball is just not generating the money it used to.
Well, you started going down the path of Florida State, at least with the fact that they blew out their coach early. So Willie Taggart's done. He's 21 games in, or he was, to his stint at Florida State. He's going to be owed, I think, something like $18 million. In a way, that completely grosses me out. I mean, it is, how out of control are we with college football? Now, for their situation, I mean, you mentioned the comments of the AD. I mean, he compared the buyout to the potential losses of keeping the guy around, and especially keeping the guy around for the rest of the season, and he thinks it's still a win to get rid of him early. I'm fascinated to see what they do and if they have a coach in place or if it makes – I just don't know that it makes any difference in terms of getting ahead of the competition to fire a coach with five games left. Especially since, especially a school like Florida State, and UNLV is going to be in the same situation. You're probably going to be making runs at people who have jobs.
But I don't think it's a matter of function. I think it's a matter of looking at your program and saying, what are our expectations, and are we meeting them, and more importantly, are we going to meet them? Because part of what Desiree Reed-Francois talked about with Marvin Menzies and the basketball program was, I didn't see us getting better. I didn't see us going where we needed to go.
Right.
Do you see us now, would be my question to her. Do you see us now going where we need to go? And I'm not implying that I know the answer. I'm not here to tell you that. You know your program and Tony Sanchez and your season ticket sales and your budget better than I do. But you need to have an answer to that question. And right now, I don't care about who you go get next time. It's about meeting the expectation that you set out. If you're Florida State, you damn well know what the expectations are every single year, and they weren't close to them this year.
Would your, for UNLV, would your thoughts be different or I guess more concrete in the direction of getting rid of Sanchez now if they were going after a coach who's not working? Would that change things? That you could have a name, have that person essentially in place behind the scenes to start on recruiting, retention? Would that change it for you?
Yeah, it's a small
bump. I mean, the name,
that
was out there last year was Jim Mora Jr. If he's a candidate again and you want him and that's your guy, not some of the FCS and lower name candidates, if that's the guy, then do you just pull the plug now and go, hey, you know what, within 2 weeks, Mora's named?
If the money is there, do what you got to do. If the money is there.
By the way, do you even like the name?
Do I? Look, let's go. Let's just play the game that we've played with UNLV football for a number of years. Have we gone to the old big name with John Robinson? Yes. Have we gone with the hot coordinator in Mike Sanford? Yes. Have we gone with something that has never been tried before with Tony Sanchez?
Right.
Yes.
FCS before that?
Bobby Houck. Yes. We have tried every path that there is.
Right. So
there is no answer other than pay the coach, get the right coach, make a commitment to the program, and hope that it works out, because everyone honestly hoped that the Tony Sanchez thing would work out differently than it has to this point.
5 o'clock, or check that, 4 o'clock hour is on the way. We got happy hour. It's here at Pizza Rock for Monday Night Football. You got the Cowboys at Adam Candy's Giants food and drink as low as $4. That includes the big can of PBR. You can also get the $4 meatballs, the $5 personal one-topping pizza. Your favorite, I'm just going to say it's your favorite because I saw you have it one time, the Cal Italia, which I was drooling over. All that stuff is good to go, so get on down here. We got a good game on tap, a meaningful game for the Cowboys here at Pizza Rock, Green Valley Ranch.
Josie Cofield and Company at Pizza Rock inside Green Valley Ranch to watch the big matchup tonight in the NFL.